I would like to introduce the first speaker, Jerry S. from the Primary Purpose Group of NA in the PICNA area of NA.
Good job. Everybody, my name is Jerry. I'm an addict. First of all, I want to thank God for touching Rick and the committee's heart, found me worthy of speaking at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I'm still tickled by the fact that we were here last year at the same spot, and Cheryl and I were speaking on a topic last year, but there's no coincidences, and I'm here again, and I'm just really, I'm still enthused and still honored to be able to just be a member, you know, of this fellowship. Narcotics Anonymous has put my life into a language. It has given me purpose. And it has allowed me to interact with a lot of different people. For the last 20-something years, I've been clean since July 26 of 86. And through that time, a lot of things have happened. And some of my most memorable things that has happened has been my interaction with people in this fellowship. Being able to be involved in people's lives where, you know, there's these moments where there's no shadow of a doubt that I'm supposed to be no other place than to be with you. You know, whether it's speaking at a meeting, talking to one of the guys that gave me the privilege to honor to sponsor them, or just talking to somebody after a meeting, or you know, those type of things. And I work with guys in doing these steps, and my sponsor worked with me in doing these steps. And there's been so many opportunities, you know, for me to grow just by doing these steps. It talks about in just for today about having a new perspective on our lives. And my perspective on life has really, really, really changed as a result of being a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Each time that I would go to a step meeting, work a step with my sponsor, work a step with one of the guys that I sponsor, or just share about steps, there has been, it talks about this in our book about this, the evidence of the steps working in our lives. It talks about the spiritual awakening, but it talks about the peace of mind. And as a result of trying to live by these principles. And there's times I have a lot of chaos in my life, but it ain't as crazy as it was. You know, like I said, Narcotics Anonymous has put my life into a language, so I know what to call it a lot of times. Simple words like powerlessness or unmanageability or obsession or compulsion, I have a frame of reference. This new perspective that I have on life now about the principles that are contained in the steps and the spiritual awakening, I keep it real simple. I'm confronted every day, many times a day, where I can practice a principle or not. I remember not really knowing what they are and what it is. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it seemed like as far as I can look back, 90%, 85% of it was misery. It was nothing good that I could kind of go on. And today, there are some things that I think that has always been in me. It talks about in one of our books, it talks about an emerging integrity, which suggests to me that it was always there. You know, it can't emerge if it's not in me. And my perspective on stuff today is most of the things that I need to participate in life on a healthy way is in me. Whether it's forgiveness, whether it's compassion, whether it's love, whether it's patience, whether it's tolerance, whether it's being caring and loving and all these principal things that we learn, that I've learned, it seems like the steps has allowed me to look at myself in such a way that they awaken in me at some point. I'm always presented with an opportunity to forgive somebody based on the fact that I think you've done something to me. And I could go years and years and years of having a resentment, and then at some point in my recovery or some point in that day or some point in that month, it just seems necessary that I forgive you. To me, that's a spiritual awakening. To me, where I become conscious of that and I'm able to practice that is the spirit that is awakened in me. And there are multiple levels. There's so many different principles that you guys have exposed me to or just created the right environment for me to possibly practice the principle. And it goes on all the time. It goes on every day. I had a real gentle sponsor. I think I even mentioned his name last year. I had a real gentle sponsor, and I think that's what I needed at the time, that he was a principled man. So I had someone that I could mimic. I think in a program we call it attraction rather than promotion. And he was that example for me. And I say this often, that this man could and would do things that at that time I felt like I was incapable of doing for another human being. It could be something real simple, like going out your way, taking somebody somewhere, or extending yourself and giving somebody some time or some money or different things like that that my sponsor would do. He was a principled man. And that was attractive to me. So when we start doing the step work, I wasn't always gung-ho about doing step work. But, you know, I did it. And consequently, my perspective is the part of me that is made in God's image, you know, begin to show itself, begin to resurrect itself. And I start believing that possibly I'm a decent person and a decent man. So when I look back now, as opposed to before, when I look back before, all I saw was all this destruction and all this craziness. But now when I look back, I see some good things. I hear you guys say some good things. And the most rewarding, one of the most rewarding things to me is, let me say this first, that I'm the most imperfect man I know. Okay? But I'm starting to believe that I'm a good man. And I do live by the principles the best I can most of the time. The message, however, is meaningless unless we live it. I mean, I can come and give y'all a bunch of language. And God is so powerful that somebody still may get something. But part of my satisfaction is my conscience is clear and that I'm doing the best I can. You know, I do try to live, the best I can. Right now, I work with a group of men that are trying to get this program. Some of the basics, you know, staying clean. And I'm trying to give this message every single day that I go in there. I mean, every single day. I mean, let me just share this real quick. I had been working at this one place for about 9 years. Worked with all men. And I've seen the magic. Man, listen to me. I've seen the magic happen, man, in front of my eyes as a direct result of giving back what was given to me. That's what I'm talking about, making a difference in somebody's life where you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is working with you or working with me in that moment, and I can see a transformation that's happening in you, and at the same time, a transformation is happening in me. Because the more that happens, the more I believe. I tell the guys, I say, as long as you look at me and tell me that Narcotics Anonymous don't work, I'll look at you 5 minutes longer and tell you that it does. There's nothing you can say to me. I've already been graced and blessed to reap some of the benefits of this program. And back in May, I was laid off from the job along with another administrator, and plus my boss, the CEO, had to get the board to lay him off too, because the money kind of ran short toward the end of the fiscal year. We're supposed to get it back and blah 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 blah. I goes on unemployment, and I was asked to still volunteer to keep the program running. Now, I'm going to do, back in the day, when I was getting high, I don't do nothing unless you pay me. Everything was about getting paid, getting it in, being self-centered. But when you look at somebody in the eye every day, and telling them about these principles and that this thing works and you hang in there and you showing up every day, whether it's raining, whether it's snowing. You're looking at them in 5 extra minutes. You're seeing their life changed. So I showed up. See, the message didn't change. My love and compassion that had been awakened in me did not change. You know, I could have been self absorbed and self-centered and all that, and say, like, well, you ain't paying me, then you don't like me, you don't want me to. No. Was that easy? No. Did I go through the disease part first? I always do. But I work through it, and I think that's part of the message that I want to give today, is that it says about this understanding comes slowly over a period of time, even in each individual situation that I may be in. I don't get it right away. You know, just because I'm on point Monday don't necessarily mean that I don't regress on Tuesday. And these spiritual principles that I believe that's been awakened in me are more of the truth than what I was living before. And the truth never changes. I just got to kind of catch up with it. One of my favorite readings, paragraphs in our readings from the 12th step, it works on life. On page 121, speaks to how I visualize us when we come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And how I visualize us who are waiting for us to come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. It says we greet each other with the recognition reserved for survivors of the same nearly fatal catastrophe. And my commitment in my spirit allows me to want to carry this message. I want to help somebody. I remember telling my son one time, just to make a point, I said, if you use and go through what I went through, what I was using, I'd think about killing you. I don't want to see nobody go through what I went through. Even though I know people went through a lot more than me, and I didn't mean it literally, but it was just a way of expressing you don't have to go through all of that I went through. So it says, we greet each other with the recognition reserved for survivors of the same nearly fatal catastrophe. This shared experience, more than anything else, contributes to the atmosphere of unconditional love in our meetings. And I share this often because it's a visual that I have. When it talks about the greeting that we reserve for that person that survived a near fatal catastrophe. All of us are survivors of a near fatal catastrophe. And when that new person comes in, the question is, Jerry, what type of greeting do you have? You know, people say sometimes, like, welcome home, and they say different things like that. And I remember, and some of you may have heard me say this before, I remember when that tsunami happened, and they were showing all these different pictures of that catastrophe. And this guy was like on the riverbank. He was on land, but the water was rushing real fast. And he was trying to hold on to a branch or a small tree or something, but he had his kids. But he also had his wife who was in the water. And but he couldn't negotiate at all. And she kept saying, let me go, let me go, let me go. Like, you want to fall in, kind of, or the kids are going to fall in, or both. And what it makes me think of is, once they put all those people in the, what was it, Superdome or something like that? I often think what type of greeting he would have reserved for her if she walked through the door after he had to let her go. A survivor of a near-fatal catastrophe. A greeting that God has entrusted me with. It says that too. It says, helping others is perhaps the highest aspiration of the human heart. It's something we have been entrusted with as a result of a higher power working in our lives. We would do well to remember to ask the God of our understanding to continue working through us in our efforts to carry the message. That's some powerful stuff to me. That God thinks enough of me, a cold-blooded dope fiend, that he has mercy and grace on, he allows me to be clean, and then entrusts me with something to help you. So I'm blessed all the way around. There's a lot of near-fatal catastrophes that were catastrophes, where people did not survive this. And if I work these steps to the best of my ability, my new perspective is that the God of my understanding is going to put somebody in my life that's going to need something I have. And I don't want to miss those opportunities because this is life-threatening. We can go around the room right now and just name how many people we know that's dead as a direct result of this illness. It's important to work the steps. I've been talking a lot, and I'm going to wrap this up in a few minutes. I've been talking a lot from this brother from Baltimore. And we spoke together up in Aliquippa, and that's when Rick had asked me to come down here again this year. And one thing that he said on his tape, which he shared with me again the other day, and I don't know where he got this reading from, but I need to find where it is. He said it's in one of the pieces of our literature. And he said that an addict not working the steps is potentially dangerous, more dangerous than the person that's using. What that mean yet, I ain't quite sure. But I'm saying it's important for us to work the steps. Because the question is, what is your message? There's too many people that are coming through these doors and they just need that one word of wisdom that can make a difference. My sponsor always told me, you can't lead nobody where you're not willing to go. Can't help someone with the step work if you're not doing the step work. If you're not benefiting from the spiritual awakenings that's coming from the step work. Now, I'm not saying that God can't and won't work through us through other ways and other means and just kind of get it because you're there and it touches some. I'm not saying that. But there is something real special that happens as a result of working these steps. Something real special happens. We cry. I do step work with people. We always end up crying. Awesome. I don't mean to cry. But it touches me some tender place. some place that always can't be put into words. It just happens. And I believe that that's our spirit's awakening. So I put a lot of energy into trying to be hard or whatever. Put a lot of energy into it. Misrepresenting what a man is, or misrepresenting what a human being is, or whatever I was thinking at that time. Last thing I want to finish with is, I try not to practice the 12th step without remembering the first step. Because all I can do is try. I can try to carry a message, but that doesn't mean you're ready to receive it. I came into the rooms a few years before I surrendered. My responsibility is just to get the message. That's it. Limited as it may be, I say, my prayers change over a period of time, but one prayer is kind of consistent. And that when I speak, I just ask the God to understand if I can just touch one person. Some person just hears something that's going to make their moment a good one, their day a little bit better, or something like that. I have no control over what people receive. Here's my last perspective, though. If I'm open, and I become transparent, and I share openly and honestly, no matter what I say, you'll hear what you need to hear in your own heart's language. That's the way it happens. You'll hear what you need to hear in your own heart's language. It might even be what I said. Let me tell. But whatever you need to hear, if you're open, you hear what you need to hear. So, I was telling Danny that I was kind of inferring that I'm not going to stay for too long because I want to get fed. Cheryl's one of those people that always gives me things that I need. So, I just want to thank everybody for being here. Being patient, and again, I want to thank God for touching Rick's heart and the committee, finding me worthy of speaking here at this meeting. My name is Jerry, and I'm an addict.
I would like to introduce the second speaker, Cheryl L. from
Rick Park 12 Club.
In the...
She'll tell it.
May I have your name, Cheryl?
Cheryl.
It's kind of funny because we're sitting here waiting for the meeting to start, and Jerry walks up and talks to Jerry. I'm like, didn't we speak here last year? Like, same place. Same two together, different time. And I'm like, I think it was different topics. I'm going to try not to take too much time either, I think. But I'm going to actually kind of try to pick up where Jerry was talking about with the concept of survivors of the same near-fatal catastrophe. Because when he said that and reminded me of that and... talking about the 12th tradition and the anonymity is, you know, we get real caught up in talking about anonymity, meaning, you know, that I don't tell Jesse that I saw RT at the meeting last night, even though Jesse and RT both know that they're both here. Anonymity is so much more about the idea that when we're here, we're all equal. That it doesn't matter that so-and-so's a plumber, and so-and-so's a doctor, and so-and-so's a lawyer, and so-and-so's a treatment professional, and so-and-so's still living under the bridge. That when we're here, that we come together as people seeking recovery, and that there's no, you know, person down low, person up high, person on the side. But that the idea that we are all here as those survivors of that same near-fatal catastrophe that that we know is the disease of addiction. And what near-fatal might mean to one person might be very different than what it means to another, but that we're all here because for whatever, we hit what was the end for us and that we needed to do something different. The subtopic that they had, I guess I always have to be controversial in some way. So the subtopic that they had for this was the 12 tradition principles. And I think we often get so caught up in talking about the 12 tradition and talking about ever reminding us to place principles before personalities, like that's the main topic. The English teacher in me, that's a dependent clause. It can't stay, I can't just come up here and talk about ever reminding us to place principles before personalities because it's not a full sentence. Okay? The full sentence is anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. I can put a period there, I can put an exclamation point there, and we can be done. Anonymity, the state of bearing no name, the state of equality, the state of, I was doing a little reading. It looks at the idea of anonymity and humility, that to practice the spiritual principle of anonymity, I have to be able to practice the spiritual principle of humility. And, okay, so anonymity is the spiritual foundation. All right, let's see. I'm standing on some ground here. It's some firm foundation. I was watching. Jerry kept backing up, and I kept thinking, I couldn't tell how far before he would not be on firm foundation because there's a drop-off there. That anonymity is that firm foundation, that spiritual, you know, that allows us to go that next step. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of what? Of the preceding 11 traditions. Of all of our traditions. Like, without anonymity, none of those other traditions work. Without me being able to come in here and accept every other person that's in here as my equal, whether you've got one day and I've got 22 years, or you've got this minute, that we're all equal here. That whether you have a degree and I don't, whether you're green and I'm purple, that none of that matters, that when we get here, what we share is that common bond of one addict helping another, that common bond of people seeking recovery. Then Jerry started talking a little bit at the end about that idea of, I forget how you put it, how we greet each other, how we come to each other, that that becomes very important in this idea of this foundation that we led. That without that, without being able to walk into a meeting believing that I can be free from judgment, believing that I can be free to express whatever, you know, is going on that might be jeopardizing my recovery, that has to be here. Little story. So, And this was, and I tell this because I think it's humorous and that sometimes we don't think about what we say or do or how we say and do it. So I don't know. It had to be probably 15, 16 years ago. Because I didn't live in the city yet, but I was in the city and some stuff was going on. And I showed up at this meeting for a couple reasons. One, because I knew where it was. Two, because my car was going to run out of gas. And three, because, like, I needed a meeting. And so I get to this meeting, and I'm early. It was a 12:30. It was a noon 30 meeting. And I get to the meeting, and I'm sitting kind of, and, like, I'm not really sure what's going on because I get into this building and, like, I think I know where the meeting place is, and I get in there, and I don't really see any NA literature out yet, but there's some people bustling around, and nobody's doing anything, and I think, okay, I'm just going to sit down, and I'll kind of figure it out from there. I'm, like, sitting down, and so some stuff starts happening, and the NA literature starts coming out, and I wave to some people who I'd never seen before in my life. This person comes up to me and says something to me that makes me think that maybe I'm not in the right place, even though I'm, like, seeing the NA literature. And the person commented on a difference. There was a difference between me and most of the other people at the meeting. And so then I'm thinking, okay, maybe this isn't the NA meeting, and, like, they're moving the NA literature somewhere else. And I'm like, this is an NA meeting, isn't it? And he was like, yeah. I said, oh, well, then I definitely am in the right place. But that sometimes we get caught up in some of those differences that we don't always greet each other in a welcoming way. I don't remember how I was connecting that. But anyway, you know, the couple things with anonymity, I guess, and it's funny that Jerry and I are speaking, because the first place that I remember meeting Jerry was not in an NA meeting. Jerry might remember meeting me in an NA meeting, but my first recollection of meeting Jerry was in a professional capacity. And in that professional capacity, I didn't know that he was a recovering addict. I'm one of those people that I have never, since the day I got clean, kept my membership in Narcotics Anonymous a secret. Like, that's my choice. I can do that by choice. I am out in the world. I am out of the closet in the world. Everybody pretty much who knows me knows I'm an addict in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. That's my choice. I don't have the right to make that choice for somebody else. So it was kind of funny, because so in this professional environment, I outed myself, because I do that. And then it was a break time, and Jerry and I were talking, and he outed himself to me, but at that point I didn't know whether he was outed to everybody else. So I try to respect that. I'm also a big, I'm a big advocate that, I mean, unless there's something really, like, would be devastating about outing ourselves, I think so much of what continues to be the stigma of addiction, what continues to impact that ability to change the lie, once an addict, always an addict, is our lack of willingness to out ourselves. That, when I think about the people I know and the things we do and how amazing we are, particularly when we put a little bit of time together and, you know, we're members of the parent-teacher organization and some of us are in politics and some of us are high up in corporations and some of us do amazing community service and some of us just show up to work every day. Let me say that again. Some of us show up to work every day. Like, I know some, quote, normal people that don't do that. That if more of us are out there being willing to say that, then it's not, oh, them damn junkies. Those addicts don't ever change. So many of us have made such significant changes, and the world doesn't see it because we don't necessarily put ourselves out there. But I'm going to get off that high horse because everybody has to make that decision for themselves. And I respect people who, for whatever reason, that isn't their decision. So one of the things, though, you know, when we look at, you know, I'm real big on talking about anonymity is what makes us equal. It's that state of bearing no name. It's also that idea, though, that it's not my decision whether or not you let people know. So I have a child. I have a child that's been raised in the fellowship. And, you know, I remember early on having to teach my daughter that, you know, when we run into people at the grocery store, you can't just shout, "Hey, Jason, you going to the meeting tonight?" Because Jason might not want everybody to know that he goes to meetings. You know, the other thing, it's kind of interesting speaking about this topic in 2010, because we faced some stuff with anonymity that that we never faced before due to technology. So in the same way that I don't make a habit of shouting across Giant Eagle or Costco or Starbucks or wherever I might be, you know, to so-and-so if they're, you know, going to the home group, I don't know how many of you are on some kind of social network on the internet, but, like, I don't have the right to put that stuff on somebody else's page. And depending on how, you know, we interconnect, the stuff that I, you know, I have to think about even the stuff that I post on my own space that then allows somebody else's, somebody else's, somebody else's to see becomes an issue. And, you know, and I'd like, you know, like I said, I'm one that thinks we should all be out of the closet. But I know that everybody gets to make that choice, so I don't, you know, try to make that choice for other people. But I think that that creates a whole new discussion that we have around this. Of how do I respect your anonymity in an environment that doesn't seem as obvious as the middle of the grocery store? You know, the other thing, okay, I'm going to get to that dependent clause of ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. You know, it's almost funny because if I'm truly practicing the spiritual principle of anonymity, then there are no personalities. Like, if I'm truly looking out and seeing every person in front of me as my equal, as just another recovering addict, as somebody just trying to get another day clean, grow spiritually, change, I'm not really thinking what a jerk you are. I'm not really thinking, wow, your dress is really short. I'm not really thinking, I know who you did last night and it wasn't your husband. Like, I'm just looking out and thinking, okay, somebody's trying to get another day clean. Somebody's trying to grow spiritually and just like me, they fall short. The simple thing is that, you know, it's like that interesting thing is that without that spiritual foundation of anonymity, you know, traditions 1 through 11 fall apart, but it's really hard without a grasp of traditions 1 through 11 to really go ahead and know how to have that foundation of anonymity, of accepting each other as we are, as equals, without all of that other stuff. The other thing I want to say about, you know, that whole idea of anonymity and principles before personalities is, and it ties in again with that word humility, is anonymity is about doing the next right thing, doing the right thing, doing what needs to be done. It's the beginning of, it's part of that concept of selfless service. It's about doing it because it needs to be done, not because I'm going to be recognized for it. You know, it's interesting. Well, I mean, it's also one of those things that's changed. But, you know, when you generally look at service positions and what's filled and what's not filled, the stuff that everybody sees are often the positions that are filled. And the positions that are the grunt work or the dirty work or that nobody knows who's in that position, those are the ones that often go unfulfilled. Because sometimes we're not in it because, hey, somebody needs to be putting NA literature in the magistrate's office. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. But, wow, I get to stand on stage in front of 5,000 addicts to announce the speaker? You know, that's a little more exciting. So anonymity, I really think plays, you know, a role in, you know, what we do, how we serve, when we serve, and why we serve. And, you know, it's funny, you know, we have some clean time requirements for things, and sometimes I think, you know, it ends up backwards, you know, because by the time somebody, you know, has the clean time to do something, it's like, yeah, but that's one of those positions that really only needs 6 months. You know, you've got the clean time to really do something well and responsibly, and it's like, yeah, well, I've worked my way up, down, or around that position. I think it's also the reason why a lot of people get some clean time and they get really excited. I've been seeing this a lot lately of, you know, very excited to be their home group's GSR at 10 years clean. Because I finally know how to do the position, you know. I finally know what's important there. You know, this tradition, I don't know, it so connects everything that's before it. It so connects, you know, to the steps. You know, and it's one of those traditions that I think really pairs well with the step that it goes with, because it, you know, they're both about, you know, being able to apply principles in a way that's really reliant on having done the work before it. Jerry started talking for a minute about you know, the idea that that we relapse, that people relapse and they die. And, you know, one of the things that I think about, like, with the second half of this tradition, although it goes with the first as well, is that sometimes some of us see somebody come in and out and in and out and out. What happens as a result of that is we get hurt. You know, we put our hearts out. We love each other. We welcome each other. We say, keep coming back, and we care about each other, and we build relationships. And people go out, and we welcome them back. And honest truth for me, I can't talk about anybody else. The honest truth for me is after some time, there's a couple things that happen. Is I think, you know, I get that smart alecky in my head, well, what's going to be different this time? And a lot of that is that defense for me, because, like, I don't want to put myself out to get hurt again. I don't want to love you again. You know, you've been gone, and you know what? Like, if you're gone, I don't have to. You know, like, I've you've been gone long enough that I don't feel that hurt. But when you're back in my face again, and I'm gonna take that risk of loving you again, that sometimes that gets really scary. And so I think a lot of times, you know, when we think about personalities, you know, I hate that term that gets thrown around here, chronic relapser. Like, that implies that, like I'm always going to relapse, like I'm never going to get that I'm never going to get clean. And that happens to some people. But sometimes those things that we have, those labels that we have in our heads for each other, and I know that I can't be the only person that sees somebody walk in a room and in my head go, again? You know, pick up a white key tag and I'm like, again? Say, I'm doing it different this time, but you're still with another newcomer? Or, you know, I'm doing it different this time, but, you know, I'm still hanging around people. Whatever it is, I'm human. So I can come up here and talk about principles before personalities and anonymity and looking out and you're all equal. And the fact of the matter is, you know, there's some not so nice stuff in my head sometimes. You know, I try to do the work. the last couple of years, there's been some big losses in my way of people who decided that maybe one more time would be different. And after a couple of them, I was ready to, like, just roll up in a ball. And I was quitting N.A. My husband had to talk me out of quitting N.A. You know, because, you know, there was a part of me that thought, you know, I've been doing the same thing for 22 years. I think I could probably stay clean. I may or may not continue to grow spiritually. But I was at a place where, like, I didn't want to put myself out to the hurt that happens from loving you people who are just like me. He convinced me otherwise, just by listening and letting me talk myself through how stupid that was. You know, anonymity is that idea that reminds me that, you know what, really, any of those people that didn't come back, I could be that person. You know, that I am no different than somebody who woke up one morning and thought, okay, one more time it's going to be different. I don't know what, you know, necessarily keeps me from waking up one morning and thinking one more time, it's going to be different. You know, anonymity is, you know, what reminds me that we're all the same. And that means that ill fate could be mine. Anonymity is what keeps me coming back, you know, despite our differences, our similarities, our warped ours, because I got one too, warped personalities, because this is the only place I know that saves my life on a daily basis. Now I think about how I come to be standing up here today, and you know, there's, you know, the way things happen. So a really, really good friend who moved away to get a life, and he built one, invited me and some other people to come watch him celebrate 10 years at his old home group. And we did that, and it was amazing. And, of course, you know, you end up somewhere in Indiana, PA, anywhere coming up on time for planning for the retreat. And so somebody, like, snagged me after the meeting and said, well, are you, you know, you willing? Like, I'm going to be real honest. Part of me wanted to say, oh, we ain't coming this year. like that's really going to happen, right? You know, and so I said yes, and I put it in my little calendar, and I kept thinking, maybe they're going to forget that they asked me, right? You know, so I'm like 2 weeks before I get a phone call, just making sure you're still coming. A week before I get a phone call, just making sure you're still coming. You know, and of course, I've been really trying. You know, I figured out that you get to choose whether or not to have a resentment. This is a recent figuring of mine. So I wanted to have a resentment because they asked me to speak on a tradition again. And I decided I wasn't going to have a resentment. And then I, you know, read the tradition a little bit, and I got, like, really excited about being able to speak on the tradition. And you know, it's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak. And, wow, I'm, like, looking out and thinking, that's a lot of people for a 12-step and 12-tradition meeting at a spiritual retreat. So, like, I feel good about that. The last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to be quiet, and then if somebody else has something to say, they can probably come up and say it, is, and this is my pet peeve, and it's funny because it's in the literature, and it's in the literature in quotes, so it's kind of in there because we say it. I really hate, I really hate, I think it's one of the stupidest things in the world, but that's just my opinion. When we say, who you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Because I'm thinking, if I do all that, then why did I come? Like, if I leave everything that I got here, here, and I pretend that I didn't see any of you here, and I leave, what the hell do I leave with? The same stuff I came with. So, you know, it's like, okay, like, I don't need to take anybody's personal story out there with me, but I need to take the experience, strength, and hope that I got from that out there with me. You know, and if I don't remember that I saw you here, I'm really in big trouble when I go to dial that phone number. Oh, wait, I got the phone number here, so what? I can't use that either? Really, you know, that's just one of my pet peeves. I think that's one of those silly things that, like, sounded really good, but nobody really thought about what it meant. And we have a few of those, you know. I think if you don't walk away with anything other than can you, when you spend, you know, the rest of the weekend here and, you know, can you look at every person that you meet and think, that's my brother, that's my sister, we're equal, we're the same, and I'm going to greet them like I might never see them again. That's it. Thanks.